The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
As a small business owner, you make every dollar count. So what could you do with $10? Go to Vistaprint.com today and you'll get 500 high-quality custom business cards for only $9.99. That's less than 2 cents per card. And at Vistaprint, your satisfaction is absolutely guaranteed. So it's never been easier to turn 500 strangers into connections. Just visit Vistaprint.com and use promo code 3838 at checkout. That's Vistaprint.com, promo code 3838.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. A key White House figure resigns.
There's a new communications director. His name is Anthony Scaramucci.
Plus, will the president's attorney general stay on board?
I plan to continue to do so.
Later, Baltimore's top doc on the city's opioid crisis and the life-saving drug to combat it.
We're actually out of naloxone in our city. We have had to ration.
I'm Steve Dorsey at the CBS News Washington Bureau. The big news this weekend, the resignation of White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer. Let's talk with CBS News White House correspondent Stephen Portnoy. Stephen, what will the White House communications team look like?
Well, there's a new communications director. His name is Anthony Scaramucci. And Sarah Huckabee Sanders announced the departure of Sean Spicer here at the briefing Friday.
I'd like to read a statement from the president on the resignation of Press Secretary Sean Spicer. I am grateful for Sean's work on behalf of my administration and the American people. I wish him continued success as he moves on to pursue new opportunities. Just look at his great television ratings.
Now, Spicer's departure came amid reports that he was very upset by the president's decision to tap Anthony Scaramucci. Scaramucci is a former hedge fund manager who has, to our mind, no direct experience in government. Sean Spicer had decades of experience working here in Washington, both on Capitol Hill and in the Republican Party. Scaramucci said that he met with Spicer here at the White House on Friday morning before Spicer announced his departure. And Scaramucci put the best possible face on all this.
I would love to have Sean here. Sean decided that he thought it would be better to go. And for me, as it relates to Sean, it speaks volumes to who he is as a human being, who he is as a team player.
Now, Scaramucci says that he will report directly to the president.
Stephen, Scaramucci did dodge some questions, if not all questions, on the Russia probe. Where do we stand on that investigation?
Well, it was very interesting because the main story on Friday morning was all about the fact that there was a shakeup on the president's personal legal team. After just 2 months on the job, the president's private New York-based attorney Mark Kasowitz was said to be out, and spokesman Mark Corallo resigned. Meanwhile, there are reports, there was certainly a blockbuster headline in the Washington Post on Friday that suggested the president has asked his attorneys to look into whether he can issue pardons to his aides or family members or even himself.
Stephen, finally, the president has also been pushing for a vote in the Senate on health care reform. We're expecting that Tuesday?
Tuesday is very possible. We'll have to watch it closely. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said he had every expectation that it will achieve the 50 votes necessary. And going into this week, the main story was that the repeal and replace effort had collapsed because moderate Republicans said they wouldn't even vote on that key procedural motion that the Majority Leader intends to make early next week.
CBS News White House correspondent Stephen Portnoy. Good talking with you, Stephen.
You too, Steve. Thanks.
Attorney General Jeff Sessions says he plans to continue on the job for now.
We love this job. We love this department. And I plan to continue to do so as long as that is appropriate.
It comes after the president criticized Sessions in an interview with the New York Times for recusing himself from the Russia probe.
I think it's very unfair to the president. How do you take a job and then recuse yourself?
Senator John McCain says he'll be back soon after being diagnosed with brain cancer.
I can't think of anything I've done since 1999 politically, in many ways personally, that was worth doing without John.
McCain, watching from Phoenix, told his friend Lindsey Graham, enough is enough.
He has called me three times this morning. No more woe is me, Lindsey. He is yelling at me to buck up. So I'm going to buck up.
The two defense hawks have a long-running bromance.
He is loyal to his friends. He loves his country. And if he has to stand up to his party for his country, so be it. He would die for this country. I love him to death.
It was Graham who noticed McCain's recent fatigue and urged him to go get checked. The diagnosis, glioblastoma, an aggressive form of brain cancer, surprised colleagues who thought perhaps McCain's melanoma had returned.
Obviously, this is tough.
Arizona's junior senator Jeff Flake is choosing to stay optimistic.
He's got longevity in the family. His mother is 105.
Still there. She just quit driving a couple of years ago, I think, if she's not still.
Perseverance, it seems, is a family trait.
Serving in Attack Squadron 163.
Senators know he'll need to marshal that fighting spirit for the battle to come.
Anybody who would not leave a prisoner of war camp until his colleagues were released as well, voluntarily stay there longer than he should. That says all you need to know about John McCain.
McCain is staying involved in policy conversations from Phoenix on Thursday. He released a statement making it clear that he is still going to be a thorn in the side of the Trump administration. This was a statement about the White House dropping a program to help the Syrian opposition. And McCain said the move, quote, is playing right into the hands of Vladimir Putin.
Nancy Cordes reporting from Capitol Hill. Glioblastoma is an aggressive brain cancer and the deadliest. Only about 10% of patients live longer than 5 years. Correspondent Kenneth Craig has more on possible treatments and outcomes.
Glioblastoma is an aggressive form of brain cancer that can be tough to treat.
A glioblastoma is the most common and unfortunately also the most malignant primary brain tumor.
Increased pressure in the brain can cause symptoms including headache, nausea, vomiting, and drowsiness. The average patient survives about 15 months.
I always encourage my patients that averages are just that. They're averages, and there are many people who do better than average, and I have patients who live for 2, 5, even 10 years.
The American Brain Tumor Association says more than 12,000 cases are expected to be diagnosed this year. Treatment for glioblastoma typically involves surgery to remove as much of the tumor as possible, and then chemotherapy and radiation. Many patients are also opting for experimental treatments.
Tumor vaccines or immunotherapy, viral therapy. There's a new device that basically you can wear and creates alternating currents that are designed to confuse the tumor cells.
Senator McCain is said to be weighing his next treatment options with his family and doctors. Kenneth Craig, CBS News, New York.
O.J. Simpson is planning his life as a free man again after getting parole Thursday. He's been serving his sentence at a Nevada prison for armed robbery and kidnapping after he held up sports memorabilia dealers in Las Vegas who, he claims, stole his property.
I've spent 9 years making no excuses about anything. I am sorry that things turned out the way they did.
More from correspondent Steve Futterman.
At times, O.J. Simpson presented a version of himself that seemed to go directly against some of the things we know about the former football star. At one point, Simpson declared that no one has ever accused him of pulling a weapon on anyone. Of course, that's simply not true. Simpson was the defendant in one of the most sensational murder trials ever. He was found not guilty, but he definitely was accused.
Still to come, one less country Americans will be able to visit.
It is a long overdue action.
That's next on the Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. The U.S. is banning Americans from traveling to North Korea. Only those with special permission from the State Department will be allowed to visit. It comes after UVA student Otto Warmbier died after falling into a coma in a North Korean prison. Jonathan Pollock with the Brookings Institution agrees with the ban.
Any American who tries to travel to North Korea these days is putting his or her own personal freedom and maybe even their life at risk.
At least two people have died and dozens sent to hospitals after an earthquake in the Aegean Sea Thursday. CBS News reporter Nick Barnett has more from Athens.
The magnitude 6.7 earthquake struck just after 1:30 a.m. local time, centered in the Aegean Sea between the Greek island of Kos and the Turkish city of Bodrum. Local officials on Kos say several older buildings on the island have collapsed and rescue crews are working to dig people out from under the rubble. The quake was even powerful enough to cause a tsunami, which flooded some coastal areas on the island as well as the Bodrum area on the Turkish side.
There's been new legal action in North Carolina over the contentious issue of the use of public bathrooms by transgender people.
A new lawsuit says transgender people in North Carolina, including Maddie Goss, are still effectively prevented from using restrooms matching their gender identity under a law that replaced the state's notorious bathroom bill earlier this year.
This law invites people to single us out for discrimination, harassment, or worse, violence. HB 142 leaves me with the frightening feeling that anything could happen when I use the restroom in a public building.
The controversial original law cost the state job expansions, concerts, and championship sporting events. Jim Crisula, CBS News, Greensboro, North Carolina.
A Tennessee judge is offering inmates their less jail time. The catch? They'll need to get a vasectomy or a birth control implant. That judge says it's his way to prevent babies who are born addicted to drugs. Correspondent David Begno reports on that controversial offer.
I'm not on a crusade of any sort. I'm trying to help people.
Judge Sam Benningfield estimates that 80 to 90% of the cases that come before him are tied in some way to drugs or alcohol. So when the local health department proposed a class for inmates at the county jail on the risks of harming their children.
Well, it seemed to me almost a no-brainer, you know. Offer these women a chance to think about what they're doing and to try to rehabilitate their life.
He issued this twofold standing order. Inmates could get 2 days knocked off their sentence if they completed the Department of Health's NAS educational program. On top of that, he offered an additional 30 days off of an inmate sentence if they undergo a birth control procedure, vasectomy for men and a contraceptive implant for women.
Based on your legal expertise, you think this is illegal?
I think it is potentially unlawful, yes.
Bryant Dunaway is the local district attorney general. His prosecutors handle cases in front of Judge Benningfield.
It's not the place of the government or the courts or the state of Tennessee to encourage the trading of fertility procedures for reduction in sentences.
But let me push back on that. The judge would say, I'm not encouraging anything. I'm simply saying if you do it, you'll get this.
And so I disagree with that. I think by offering that as an option on his own, he's encouraging that.
So far, 24 women have had the implant procedure, and 38 men have signed up for the vasectomy.
This is not forced on them.
Judge Benningfield says he was blindsided by the criticism.
Trying to help these folks, you know, begin to think about taking responsibility for their life and doing right and giving them a leg up, you know, when they get out of jail, to perhaps rehabilitate themselves and not be burdened again with unwanted children and all that comes with that.
For what it's worth, the county sheriff fully supports the judge. The ACLU believes the judge's order is unconstitutional. This free program for inmates is not sterilization. That implant for women, it lasts 3 years, and men can have their vasectomies reversed.
The Minneapolis police chief says the deadly officer-involved shooting of an Australian woman there should not have happened. Correspondent Jamie Yukas is there with more.
Justine didn't have to die.
Minneapolis Police Chief Janae Harteau had harsh criticism for the actions of Officer Mohammed Noor the night Justine Damon died.
On our squad cars, you will find the words, to protect with courage and serve with compassion. This did not happen.
Damon called 911 two times Saturday after hearing what she thought was a rape in the alley behind her home. Officers Noor and Matthew Harity responded. According to state investigators, Harity drove down the alley and said he was startled by a loud sound just before Damon appeared at his door. Noor fired a single fatal shot from the passenger seat, killing Damon.
It is my belief that the body camera should have been activated.
Prosecute the police! No justice, no peace!
Shortly after the press conference, protesters marched through the streets in South Minneapolis. Justine's fiancé, Don Damon, joined the crowd at a vigil outside his home. By his side, the mother of Philando Castile, who was shot and killed by a police officer from a nearby department last summer.
We're just here to support the family. That's it.
Officer Noor still has not spoken to authorities. His attorney told me he doesn't intend to speak until this investigation is complete.
Jamie Yukas reporting from Minneapolis. The Baltimore Police Department is investigating an officer who appears on body camera video to be planting evidence. It seems to show officers staging evidence earlier this year during a drug arrest. Correspondent Jeff Pagase has more from Baltimore.
Open the door!
In body camera video released Wednesday, Baltimore police officers are seen pulling over a driver in January.
Take it easy.
And then searching and arresting his alleged dealer.
drugs, anything like that.
I bet, great.
The officers move on to the yard behind a vacant house looking for the dealer's stash.
There's going to be more here.
That's when footage appears to show one officer placing evidence on the ground, walking away, and then returning to discover it.
It's clear that they manipulated evidence in this case.
Debbie Katz-Levy is among the attorneys in the Office of the Public Defender who first raised concerns about the possibility of police misconduct.
In the first few seconds of the frame, the officer appears to be placing a can on the ground with suspected narcotics in it.
So when you see that, what do you think?
The first reaction is it's pretty egregious, but the second reaction is, thank goodness we have the body cameras.
Body cameras are now worn by tens of thousands of police officers across the country, providing an unfiltered look at interactions between police and the community. But this video highlights the control officers have over what is being recorded.
What did you see in that video?
Jeff, I saw the same thing that probably you saw and everyone in Baltimore and probably now across America has seen.
Baltimore Police Commissioner Kevin Davis said the 1,500 body cameras deployed in his city can help expose officer misconduct.
I saw video footage of officers apparently placing evidence and recovering evidence in a way that's inconsistent with the way police officers do business.
Jeff Pagase reporting from Baltimore. The primary officer involved has been suspended. The two others with him in the video have been put on desk duty. Up next, Baltimore's top doctor on the opioid crisis there.
We don't need more rhetoric or more research. We need resources, and we need them now in order to save lives.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Ransomware is software that can infiltrate your business through email, enabling cyber criminals to hijack sensitive information as ransom for your own data's release. Leveraging Barracuda email security with advanced threat detection can stop a ransomware attack in its tracks. As an added measure, Barracuda Backup allows you to recover your data without having to surrender to extortion. Crime doesn't pay when you protect your business data with Barracuda. Go to Barracuda.com/ransomware to learn more.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. A Miami neighborhood is remembering a 10-year-old boy, another young victim of the opioid crisis. Correspondent Omar Villafranca has more.
Investigators say fifth grader Alton Banks died on June 23rd after a visit to a community pool here in Miami's Overtown neighborhood. He began vomiting after coming home, and later that evening, his mother found him unresponsive. Preliminary toxicology tests showed the 10-year-old had a mix of fentanyl and heroin in his system. Miami-Dade State Attorney Catherine Fernandez Rundle.
We don't know where he got it. We don't believe at this point it was in his home. We believe that it was somewhere between the park or the pool or the sidewalk, or maybe he touched something.
Investigators say that Alton may have been exposed to the deadly drugs during his walk home. Police say that the poverty-stricken Overtown neighborhood has seen an increase in overdoses the past year.
It just totally just threw me.
Jessie Davis is Alton Banks' neighbor. She worries for her own grandchildren.
It could be anywhere. You just have to pray and talk to them, and hopefully they learn and don't pick it up or touch things. That's all I can do is to tell them.
According to the medical examiner's office, there were nearly 300 overdose deaths last year in the Miami area involving fentanyl. The drug is so powerful, a few months ago, an Ohio police officer allegedly overdosed just by touching the drug. Omar Villafranca, CBS News, Miami.
The Justice Department says it worked with international authorities to shut down the number one darknet drug site, Alphabay. European law enforcement also revealed another site called Hansa has been in police hands for the past month. Let's talk with Dr. Lena Wen. She's the Baltimore City Health Commissioner, and she's been a champion of getting the life-saving drug Narcan into the hands of more people to help combat opioid overdoses. Thanks for talking with us, Dr. Wen.
Nice to join you. Thank you.
Let's start with what's going on in Washington. The President's Drug Commission missed a second self-imposed deadline to come up with a plan to fight the opioid epidemic. What do you think is at stake here, working on the ground in Baltimore City?
In my city, there are two people every day who are dying from overdose. This epidemic has swept the country. And what's frustrating is that We actually know what works. We know that naloxone or Narcan can save someone's life at the time that they're overdosing. Actually, in Baltimore City, I have issued a blanket prescription for naloxone, and in the last 2 years, everyday residents have saved the lives of over 1,000 of their fellow residents here. We know that that works. We know that treatment exists and that treatment works, that addiction is a disease. And it doesn't make sense to me that we're waiting for a report to be issued where there has been so much research done, when actually the last administration has issued reports on what needs to be done, when we on the front lines are missing resources. We don't need more rhetoric or more research. We need resources, and we need them now in order to save lives.
What can the White House do then?
First, make naloxone available to everyone. Negotiate the price of this drug, because we should not be priced out of the ability to save lives. We're actually out of naloxone in our city. We have had to ration because we have such a limited supply, and it doesn't make sense that when there is a life-saving drug that can save someone's life within 30 seconds, that we're out of this medication. So make this medication available to everyone on the front lines, including community members. Second, increase access to treatment. Only 1 in 10 patients with a disease of addiction are able to get the help that they need, which we would never find acceptable for any other illness. The third is, while we're increasing treatment, don't take away the options that we have. The last thing that we need in a time of a public health emergency is to roll back the gains that we've made. So in Maryland, 1 in 3 of our patients with addiction depend on Medicaid for treatment. This is not the time to gut Medicaid. This is not the time to cut mental health and addiction services from essential health benefits, or to price people out of the ability to get health insurance. Getting grants is important, and increasing funding is critically important, but we cannot afford to lose insurance in the meantime. These are all the tangible things that have already been proposed, and I hope that the White House will not delay action, because these are what we on the front lines know to work, and we urgently need these resources because people are dying every day.
We've already seen cops, some schools, more EMTs equipped with naloxone or Narcan. Is this something you can get over the counter at your pharmacy in Baltimore City?
Naloxone is not yet over the counter because that's determined by the Food and Drug Administration. However, it is essentially over the counter in Baltimore because we passed a law enabling me as the city's doctor to write a standing order to the entire city, which means that anyone can go to any of our pharmacies and request naloxone under my prescription without them having visited their own doctor and without having any separate requirement. We've also negotiated with Medicaid so that patients on Medicaid can get naloxone for $1, or if they cannot pay that dollar, they can get it free.
If you're not on Medicaid, though, I've heard one emergency doctor tell me that the cost to get naloxone from a pharmacy in somewhere like Virginia could be $100.
That's right, and that is a problem. We should not have people pay so much out of pocket in order to get a life-saving drug. What we have found, too, here is that we want to make sure that our frontline providers, our EMS, our police officers, also our community outreach workers, to have naloxone, too. Again, we have saved over 1,000 people in our city just through frontline workers who are not even city workers alone. And it doesn't make sense for these frontline providers to have to pay out of pocket to save someone else's life. That's why we are having to ration naloxone, and it does not make sense when we know that people are dying every day and we have the antidote to save people's lives.
How do you respond, Dr. Wen, to folks who say treating opioid overdoses isn't the same as preventing them?
We absolutely have to focus on prevention, and prevention in public health is the best medicine. But that doesn't mean that we should ignore all those individuals who have an addiction, who have the disease of addiction, just like for any other disease. Of course, it's better for us to prevent diabetes, but does that mean that in the meantime we're going to be ignoring the millions of people who suffer from this illness? We know what works. Just like if somebody is dying from a peanut allergy, yes, it's better if they didn't eat peanuts in the first place, but we would never say, well, I'm not going to give you an EpiPen because it might make you eat more peanuts next time. We would never say the same things to someone with any other illness except for addiction and mental illness, because we stigmatize these diseases. And it's time for us to not just talk about the importance of treating these illnesses, but to put our resources where our rhetoric is.
Baltimore City Health Commissioner Dr. Lena Wen. Great talking with you.
Thank you.
Coming up on the Weekend Roundup, one billionaire says he's got approval to shrink the trip between Washington and New York to 29 minutes.
If anybody could pull this off, Elon Musk is probably the guy.
Follow us on Facebook and on Twitter, where we've got headlines at CBS Radio News. And I'm tweeting at Steve_Dorsey on the CBS News Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. Sears says it'll start selling its appliances on Amazon, including ones that can be synced with Amazon's voice assistant Alexa. The struggling department store saw its stock jump as much as 25%. Meanwhile, the FTC is looking into Amazon's purchase of Whole Foods.
As part of its review of the Whole Foods acquisition, the FTC is reviewing allegations that Amazon is misleading consumers about its pricing discounts. The group Consumer Watchdog filed a complaint that the online retailer put reference or list prices on almost half of the products reviewed, and more than half of those prices were higher than it had sold the same item for in the previous 90 days. Amazon called the study deeply flawed and the conclusions flat out wrong. Amazon settled similar allegations in Canada earlier this year. Pam Coulter, CBS News.
We've got CBS News technology consultant Larry Maggot on the line from Silicon Valley on the Weekend Roundup. Hi, Larry.
Hey, how you doing, Steve?
Larry, last time we spoke, we talked about cyberbullying. Now Twitter is getting tougher on harassment. What is Twitter doing?
Well, they've been doing things for the last several months, trying to beef up their anti-harassment, anti-cyberbullying programs, basically responding to a lot of criticism and concern, and even some loss of business. People who have quit their Twitter accounts, or maybe others who have not signed up, because they want an environment where they can feel comfortable and not be worried about somebody harassing them. So what they've done is they put in more filters. They've made it easier for people to ignore or block those that might harass them. And using technology as well as human moderators or support staff, they figured out a way to make it harder for somebody to harass somebody, shut down their account, and then open up a new account and continue to harass them under a different Twitter handle. That's something that's very common, these trolls, as they're called, going off and starting multiple accounts. And if they can figure out a way to prevent that, and apparently they've at least made some progress in that direction, that will cut down on a lot of the harassment. But I think anybody who's on Twitter, especially those who have been bothered, will tell you that they still have more work to do.
Speaking of things shutting down, I saw a report about Jawbone closing shop along with Intel. These are competitors to Fitbit. I think you even have one.
Yeah, I've got several.
Apparently, they've been in trouble for a long time in the market for fitness trackers. What's up with that?
Well, first of all, on the Intel side, they've shut down the wearable group or their wearable research. Intel thrives and does quite well in other areas, but Jawbone is going out of the marketplace. Well, part of it is just implementation on Jawbone's part in terms of their ability to compete with Fitbit, as well as their ability to compete with all of the smartwatches out there, like the Apple Watch and the Samsung watches, all of which have fitness trackers. But another part of it is that not everybody wants a dedicated fitness device. Either they're not interested in the information, or maybe they're getting that information directly from their phone. What a lot of people don't know is that every iPhone and every Android phone has an app which will track your movement, which it won't track your heartbeat, but it will track how many calories you've burned and in some cases your cycling and other activities. And you've got that on your phone anyway, so you really don't need a fitness tracker if you have a smartphone in your pocket to track your movement.
All right, Elon Musk, he says he's gotten, quote, verbal government approval, whatever that means, to build an underground hyperloop between Washington all the way up to New York. He claims the whole trip will only take 29 minutes. This is ambitious, to say the least. What do you make of this latest Elon Musk development?
Well, from the regulatory standpoint, Steve, you know a lot more about the workings of government than I do, but the little I do know is that I don't think that a verbal commitment means very much, especially when you're dealing with multiple jurisdictions in those various areas. From a technology standpoint, this has been proven, at least theoretically, that you can put in an underground transportation system, go extremely fast, and move people vast distances in very little time. I know there's a proposal to put one in California between San Francisco and Los Angeles. I can't remember how quickly it'll move people, but it will compete with the airline, so obviously very quickly. Musk has a track record. He's got a lot of money. He's got a lot of ambition. So if anybody could pull this off, Elon Musk is probably the guy.
He's also got something a little less ambitious out now, the Model 3 for Tesla. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so the Tesla Model 3, which is the all-electric car that will start at about $35,000. Now, that's the basic model. I believe if you want the autopilot software, you got to pay more. And so I don't think too many people are going to wind up paying quite $35,000. But they've been taking orders, and now they are finally rolling them off the assembly line. The first one came off the line not that long ago, and the hope is that they're going to ramp up and be able to make a big dent in the hundreds of thousands of pre-sales or reservations that they've gotten, including, by the way, yours truly. I'm kind of waiting for my Tesla Model 3. Don't know when I'll get it, but I'm kind of excited to see it.
Well, I can't wait to hear your first report on the first drive in that Model 3.
Absolutely.
CBS News technology consultant Larry Magid. Thanks, Larry.
Thanks so much.
While there's excitement for traveling underground on Musk's Hyperloop and in a Tesla car, there's anxiety in the air, this time for JetBlue, after a New York mother of three says her family was removed from a JetBlue flight in Florida because her one-year-old kicked another passenger's seat. Chris Van Cleve reports.
Just come with me outside the plane.
Mandy Ifra's cell phone was recording when a ground agent informed her JetBlue was removing her family of five from the flight in Fort Lauderdale.
I need to get back to New York. I need my kids back home.
She says the airline's decision came after her one-year-old kicked the seat of another passenger.
Wait, record this. What happened? I want to hear from you. What did you hear happen?
But the airline denied her account, saying the family was removed after a verbal altercation that included physical threats and profanities against a nearby customer. It's the latest example of airlines pushing back rather than backing down to customer complaints. When Ann Coulter launched a Twitter war with Delta over a reassigned seat, the airline shot back. Your insults about our other customers and employees are unacceptable and unnecessary. And in May, JetBlue denied it kicked a family off a plane over a birthday cake.
It's a birthday cake.
The airline said the family cursed and yelled at the crew. In April, United Airlines was sharply criticized for being slow to respond to Dr. David Dow's violent removal from a plane in Chicago. An incident experts say provided airlines with a much-needed wake-up call.
Social media has changed the way people interact with companies. It seemed like airlines were, you know, falling all over themselves to apologize for absolutely anything, you know, whether or not it was really entirely the airline's fault. And now airlines here, just over the past week or so, having sort of taken that back somewhat and said, you know what, the customer is not always right.
Still, the number of complaints against airlines is rising. When you look at May 2017 compared with May of last year, the number's up nearly 57%. Chris Van Cleve, CBS News, Reagan National Airport, Virginia.
The bag used by Neil Armstrong to hold the first samples of moon dust from the famous Apollo 11 landing fetched $1.8 million at auction in New York. But Michelle Hanlon from the nonprofit group For All Moonkind says the bag should be publicly preserved.
This would be like going and chipping off a piece of the Taj Mahal and trying to sell it.
Coming up, how this song became the most streamed ever on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to 100-plus job sites with just one click. Then their powerful technology efficiently matches the right people to your job, better than anyone else. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them. In fact, over 80% of jobs posted on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate in just 24 hours. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Simply screen, rate, and manage candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. One more time to try it for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. There's new concerns about the state of Maryland's most famous seafood this summer. Here's correspondent Weijia Jiang in Annapolis.
At Cantler's Crab House in Annapolis, business is booming.
Bruce Whalen says his staff steams about 70 bushels of male crabs every weekend.
We try to give everybody a full crab that we can, but the smaller crabs always seem to be fuller. They're always just a little bit sweeter.
But it's not only demand that determines supply, it's also nature. State officials in Maryland and Virginia recently released alarming data from the annual dredge survey, which measures the overall crab population. It showed the bay has nearly 100 million fewer crustaceans than last year. Watermen like Captain Frank Tuma do their part to protect future harvest, which drives his charter boat business.
I can keep females. I never do. If you take all the females, you know, you're killing the next year's population.
The survey shows that strategy helps.
It was like the fourth highest that we've ever counted.
While biologists are encouraged by how many female crabs are in the water, they're concerned because the number of young crabs is one of the lowest on record.
All the eggs are laid at the mouth of the Chesapeake Bay down in Virginia. The tides, the currents, storms can take those eggs or the larval stages, float them out in the ocean, and then maybe they don't come back into the bay.
To help stabilize the population, state officials are shortening the commercial crabbing season by 10 days and reducing bushel limits for females. Because here, picking crabs is not just a summertime tradition.
Oh, yeah. Just peeling the part in the middle, then taking the shell off, getting all this gills and intestines out, and then finding the meat.
It's a way of life. Weijia Jiang, CBS News, Annapolis, Maryland.
A pet parrot was apparently a key witness in a murder trial.
A jury convicting a Western Michigan woman of first-degree murder in the shooting death of her husband in a crime apparently witnessed by the man's pet parrot. The man was shot 5 times. His former wife got custody of his parrot, who kept repeating a phrase in Martin Durham's voice, "Don't shoot, don't shoot," with a well-known expletive included. The jury deliberating about 8 hours before finding Glenna Durham guilty of killing her husband. Jim Taylor, CBS News.
Some big paychecks for some of TV's biggest stars.
Forbes magazine has done the math on TV's top stars.
Lee says if Amy would keep her mouth shut, he wouldn't have to hit her.
Dr. Phil is the top earner with $79 million a year. Fellow daytime talk host Ellen DeGeneres right behind with $77 million. These numbers include endorsement deals and merchandising. Jerry Seinfeld earned $69 million. Chef Gordon Ramsay and ubiquitous host Ryan Seacrest round out the top five. Steve Kathan, CBS News.
Meanwhile, across the pond, the BBC is under scrutiny for how much it's paying employees.
The BBC is a national institution, sometimes affectionately known here as Auntie. But the first ever disclosure of its highest earners has left the impression that Auntie is a sexist, racist, looks snob. Of the 96 on-air personalities earning $195,000 or more a year, virtually all are white, only a third are women, and the highest paid woman earns less than a quarter of the highest paid man, a DJ who makes nearly $3 million. BBC executives acknowledge the need for more gender and racial diversity, but justify the high salaries as necessary to keep talent that might otherwise be poached by Britain's commercial broadcasters, who, unlike the taxpayer-funded BBC, do not publish their salaries. Vicky Barker, CBS News, London.
The hit song Despacito has become only the third mostly or entirely Spanish song to top the U.S. charts. Here's correspondent Michelle Miller.
The song of the summer has actually been warming up fans since February when it reached the number one spot on Billboard's Hot Latin Songs chart. The king of reggaeton, Daddy Yankee, first made it big in the U.S. in 2004 with Gasolina. Luis Fonsi is a Latin balladeer with pop hits over the past 2 decades. Two Latin music vets, both Puerto Rican, fuse their hard and soft sounds to create a hybrid record.
For some reason, there are songs that have that special magic, and this one has it.
Songwriter Erica Ender co-wrote the song with Fonsi.
Why do you think it's so hits right now?
I have no idea. I do know it has spark. It has magic. It is contagious. And this is not only big for the ones involved. This is big for the Latin music. industry, period.
DJ comedian Cypher Sound says this crossover success is different from the Latin boom in the late 90s with artists like Ricky Martin, Jennifer Lopez, and Enrique Iglesias.
They were kind of taking the American pop formula and then adding Spanish language to it, or like Spanglish. But Despacito is taking reggaeton music, which is like real Puerto Rican street music, and bringing it to the masses.
Listen closely and you'll hear that repetitive reggaeton drum beat and a so-called tropical style in some unlikely places.
I'm in love with the shape of you. Sometimes people change it, they spice it up, they add different instruments on top of it, but the core is that one beat. It's like,
It was already a familiar sound to Justin Bieber. Then one fateful spring night, Bieber heard Despacito light up a club in Colombia.
What do you think of Bieber getting involved?
I am so happy he got involved. I was in the studio working on my new CD, and then Fonsi calls me, and he goes, Erica, I just received a phone call, and apparently Justin Bieber wants to record the song, like, right away. What do you think? And I go, like, are you kidding me? Go ahead. Yeah, of course.
The remix with just a single additional verse in English quickly went to number one on the Billboard Hot 100 in mid-May, where it's been ever since.
This confirms that it doesn't matter the language, it doesn't matter the time. When you get a good song in your hands, it flies.
Guys,
as high as it wants.
That does it for the Weekend Roundup. Thanks for listening. We want to get your feedback. Send us your story ideas, autograph requests, home remedies, whatever, to weekendroundup@cbsnews.com. The show's always online on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and now Spotify. The Weekend Roundup is produced at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Lou Walker is the technical supervisor. Dory Valerio is the production assistant in New York. Have a great week. I'm Steve Dorsey, CBS News.